From the land of Grand Teton University in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Market Report. It's the 14th day of January, 2022. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Mike Zuzulo. He's at GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. And Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions will tell us about that snowfall that's looping. That's right, looping its way through the Midwest. It'll miss us here, by the way, mostly, so we'll hear about that too. And then he'll take up what the weather forecast looks like for the weekend and into next week for parts of Argentina where they may get rainfall and parts of Brazil where the rainfall may stop. And it all happens on this Friday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org. That's willag.org.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, March corn in Chicago settled at $5.96 and a quarter today. That was up 8¾ cents. The May up 7¾ at $5.97 and a quarter. And December futures at $5.58¼, a half of a cent higher. March beans were down 7½ today, settled at $13.69¾. May at $13.79½, down 7¾. And November futures $12.93 a bushel, down 11½ cents. Bean meal futures at $405.60 in the March, $3.30 lower. The bean oil at $58.46, up 2 cents on the afternoon. Wheat futures finished the nearby March at $7.41½ for the soft red, down 5¼. The hard red at $7.45, down 14¾ cents. Live cattle futures in Chicago. Nearby contract at $142.12½, $1.15 higher for 100 pounds. Feeder cattle at $166.37½, down 35 cents, and lean hogs, $88.45. The settlement price there, $3.12½ higher. Crude oil on the afternoon at $83.79 a barrel, $1.67 higher. Diesel fuel up 2¼ cents at $2.63¾, and gasoline on the Arbaugh per gallon at $2.42¼, about 3¾ cents higher for the day. The Dow Jones Industrial Average at 35,654 is down 335 points, and the S&P 500 at 4,631¼ is down 20¾ points for the afternoon. Gold futures on the day currently trading at $1,817.50. They're up $3.90. The Closing Market Report, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. Mike Zuzulo at GlobalComResearch.com from Atchison, Kansas, now joins us on this Friday to discuss what happened in Chicago and his take on the marketplace. Happy Friday to you, Mike.
You too, Todd. Thanks for having me.
Well, I want to talk about Chicago because the end of the day had higher corn prices, but soybeans remained lower. I guess rainfall is continuing to be in the forecast.
Yeah, I think a couple things here. I think the pre-report mindset before USDA did their data dump this week had a buy the beans, sell the corn mindset to it, with the trade thinking that we were going to see a big reduction in beans more than corn. And we saw, I think, an equal reduction. And I think the corn reduction was actually a surprise to the trade, especially when it came to Argentina. And it really helped the world corn numbers. So I think we started to unwind the bean corn spreading, Todd, before the end of the week and this 3-day holiday coming in. But I think the 3-day holiday and getting up against the noontime models, the GFS model, and now the European, as you and I go on the air, are both suggesting maybe a little bit of a pullback in precipitation in some of these key areas of Buenos Aires and other pampas regions of Argentina that have been experiencing 105 to 115 degree temperatures this past week. So I think the market is respectful and understanding that the corn could be hurt just as badly, if not more so, in Argentina than the soybeans at this stage of the game. So I think that's what they did, was unwind that spread.
Yeah, and I made note, I think, in the same forecast, we'll ask this of Eric Snodgrass a bit later, that it's possible rainfall will stop in the northern areas, which have been drenched in Brazil, maybe a smaller crop there, and that according to USDA as well. And, of course, they've got second crop corn, Safrina, which is really dependent on rainfall continuing, because dry weather does come in there fairly quickly usually.
That's going to be a very interesting forecast to pan out as well. I'm glad you brought that up, because we did get Safra's Mercado's estimates today, and they came in at 132.3 on soybeans. This compares to USDA's 139 number this week. So a big drop in the Brazilian soybean crop, but Safra's and others are saying that the Safrina corn crop is going to be able to make up for the poor first crop corn, and they came in at just 115.6 on the crop for corn in Brazil. This compares to USDA's 115.0 this past, earlier this week. So I think it's clear that most of the trade is assuming that they're going to get a second crop corn supply and production number that offsets the first crop. So that verification of that forecast is going to be just as important as Argentina a couple, 3 weeks down the road, I suspect.
Here in the United States, are you watching closely the cash grain basis across the Corn Belt? And what should producers consider as they watch this over the next week or two?
Yeah, I have been, Todd, and I think this is where the report comes into play as well, and what you and I have just been talking about. We jumped over to more of a demand-side market at the end of the week because we know the supplies now. We know the supplies are probably going to fall, but we've got another month before the next WASDE report. So I think the cash price may, in the basis, may find a little bit more softness. Farmer-related selling, I heard after the report, was very heavy from essentially Decatur, Illinois, all the way down to Owensboro, Kentucky. So both interior and river bids were propped up with basis levels, and post-report selling by farmers, I think, was pretty heavy. And so I think the weakness in the cash basis probably maybe is more likely, especially if the futures goes up on missed weather events here, until we actually see the transfer of business from Asia, from South American corn and beans to U.S. corn and beans. And I think that's what we look for here in the February timeframe.
What are you watching in the macroeconomics at this point? Inflation, other sorts of things?
Yeah, I think the two big things that we left 2021 with is still involved with us in 2022, and that is the Federal Reserve tightening. That's going to be a headwind eventually. China is coming more from the fray into more of a focus, Todd. I think that they're slowing down economically pretty substantially. There's some big banks out there that see them below 5% growth in 2022. I'm right at 5%. But they're going to have to stimulate their economy. And these are the two, I think, Fed and China demand headwinds that we're probably going to have to face, especially second half of the calendar year.
Did you see the news item this week from China that nation is hopeful to expand soybean acres in a dramatic way over the next several years?
Yeah, I see that as very unlikely. I actually see that they'll come in and take on more Russian acreage basis at this point. In other words, they'll work together with Russia and some of their farm belt to increase their soybean capacity through that country, just like they are with natural gas. I don't see that happening with them being such already a large fertilizer user, and just the cost of production side of the equation doesn't make sense to me.
From the livestock sector, what are you watching?
You know, the big thing I'm watching is feed costs and hay costs and pasture range costs going forward. This drought monitor is not getting better. And in fact, in Montana, we're at 86% D2 to D4 drought. We were 8% last year. In the South, which is Oklahoma and Texas, 47% D2 to D4 drought, 17% last year. I think feed needs really got to be looked at by the ranchers. As far as the Omicron virus, I think we'll probably start to see some of the packers come back online as early as next week with their labor.
Yeah, feed needs for the ranchers, are they cutting back on the herd size?
Not yet. In fact, what they're doing is maybe cutting back on numbers, but they're adding weight. And they've been doing that for the better part of a month and a half now.
Anything else before I let you go for the day?
Just have a great weekend and be safe in the snow.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it. You too.
Thanks, Todd.
That is Mike Zuzlo. He's with GlobalComResearch.com out of Atchison, Kansas. Hey, you know, for more than 100 years, University of Illinois Extension has worked with agricultural communities to help empower them to meet the challenges they face with confidence. And now we're looking towards the future, but we'd like your help. We've got a survey to that end, looking forward at what farmers and others in the agricultural world might need in the future. You can help us out right now by taking that survey. Visit it online at go.illinois.edu/agneeds. That's go.illinois.edu/agneeds. Or you can just visit the willag.org website. I'll have the survey link posted there. And thank you for taking the time to fill this survey out. Of course, it's anonymous. It's open to all Illinois producers and anybody in the agricultural industry, including professionals, now through the end of March. It'll take about 10 to 20 minutes to complete, so set aside some time, but please do take the opportunity to help us out at Illinois Extension by visiting go.illinois.edu/agneeds. On a Friday, it's time to talk with Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. Thank you for being with us today on what I bet you hope is a snowy Friday here in our part of the world.
My kids do. I mean, my kids are like mad at me. I think they think that I control the weather. And when I just showed them this morning that I was going to get like, I don't know, somewhere between 6 and 10 inches, and it's going to snow in Western Illinois, Southern Illinois, Tennessee, Kentucky, and then all up the East Coast. And my son's like, well, what about here? And I'm like, well, you see that big fat zero? that's us. We're going to be very much just on the edge. And I say zero, but we could still get some snow around here. But my goodness, we are in a snow drought. I mean, it's the latest into the cold season, into the winter that we're right here where we live in Champaign, that we've not had an inch of snow measured yet. And my kids, I think I care most about their opinion of it than anybody else's, because with the cold air that's coming in, having bare soil and you start sending these temperatures down to single digits, overall, that's a net positive. I mean, that's going to cause the soil to really contract, and that helps with compaction. But wouldn't we love a little bit of white stuff to take the kids sledding on? So yeah, Todd, you asked that question, and there's my mouth full of an answer for you on what I think about this system that's just going to go to our south.
Yeah, well, I have a secondary question about that, because it loops around us, right? How does it pull that off?
I know at the same time. What I mean by that is this system started last night in Alberta, came through the Dakotas early today on Fridays, moving through Iowa and into Missouri tonight. So it's coming straight south on strong northwest flow aloft. And then it gets over like Memphis, and the wave that's creating the trough is going to start to make this turn and migrate east. So what happens is the trough grabs it, pulls the system towards Georgia, which, by the way, Georgia, South Carolina, very concerned about a big ice storm in that area. And then that same wave just starts to turn itself back up the East Coast, and it's going to put, you know, a big swath of 4 to 12 inches of snow all along the Appalachian Mountains into the interior parts of New England. And it just hooked right around us. And if you'd asked me on Monday, I would have been telling you, hey, look out, we might get 2 to 4 inches of snow out of this. It's going to be a good system. And then every model run after that, it's like just kept pushing it west and south. And here we go. We continue the great snow drought of 2022, with just missing out on all this stuff.
Yeah, I know you are a snow bull. I'm a snow bear. So,
boy, if there's only a market for snow.
Right? We could both play both sides of that one. What happens in the United States after that? We haven't done a lot of discussion about our winter. Any cold weather on the way?
Yeah, so I think this is quite important what's going to be taking shape here, and that is that the jet stream's getting very, what we call high amplitude. And I mean, big troughs, big ridges. So less zonal flow, less normal westerly winds aloft, and they're instead going to be turning a lot north and a lot south. So what's going on here? It's all starting in the Gulf of Alaska. It then pushes into a bigger ridge over the West Coast. So the West Coast is going warmer and drier as we look forward. What this means is over the Hudson Bay to the Great Lakes to the eastern half of North America, we're going to be seeing temperatures over the next 2 weeks. So we're going to start, you know, early next week, we're going to start to see those overnight low temperatures. We're going to see a lot of single digits. Let's just put it that way. And sometimes those wind chills are really going to crank. And the thing about that is it's going to last for 10 plus days as we finish out this month of January. In the plains, listen to this. This is important. The drought in the plains is expanding, and this pattern does not return moisture to the plains. And unlike us, they're going to have a lot of westerly flow over the mountains that's going to warm things at times, increase evaporation rates on bare soil and bare vegetation, and send them deeper into drought. And I'm extremely concerned about that area. I mean, shoot, just today on Friday, they've got a huge area, Texas, Oklahoma, and Kansas, that have red flag warnings. That's the warning we put out for the risk of wildfire getting spread by strong winds. And so that drought that's to our south and west has got to be watched with laser focus from now all the way through spring.
In speaking of drought, in Argentina, hot and dry, will conditions change because there's rainfall in the forecast? We're not there yet. What do you expect?
Yeah, so what's happened over the last several months down in Argentina is that they've had very infrequent frontal passages. Now, it was good early in the season, but then they went most of late November through December and early January without any fronts coming up from the south to trigger the development of storms. So it got dry and it got hot. We've had temperatures down there breaching that 40 degrees Celsius mark. So we're talking triple digit heat in Fahrenheit. High evaporation rates, major loss in the crop quality or the crop quality indexes that we use down there, our conditions indexes. And now we got a weak front that's going to try to change that up. And some of the noon model runs today on Friday here are suggesting better rains in parts of Argentina. It's one of those situations for the early crop that these rains come through and it's like us getting a rain in late September after you had drought in June, July, and August. You know what I'm saying? So it's not going to improve some of that early planted crop. It'll help with stuff that was planted later. And we both know how long their planting window is down in Argentina. But does it make it north of there? Do we get that into southern Brazil? Well, Rio Grande do Sul, yes. That's an area, by the way, that's about 8 inches in deficit in the last 60 days. So they're going to like that rain. But now we're going over dry north of there into like Paraná, Mato Grosso do Sul. And then when you get really far north, Mato Grosso over to Brazil's eastern growing areas, remember that was the region that for the last 60 days has had a huge surplus of rainfall. In fact, just since December 1st, I was measuring in that area 20 to 26 inches of rainfall since December 1st for those folks. They're going over dry now. So it's flipped. The whole thing is flipped. And the thing about that for the north is they're going to start really in earnest harvesting that first crop of soybeans, which we know is not going to be as big as originally thought, and they're going to rapidly plant the safrinha crop. So Todd, that's an earful, but there's a lot changing both in North America and South America right now, and I think everybody's got their eye right now on what could be partly a weather market to be watching.
Well, on that note, we've been playing with the weather market for soybeans based out of Argentina, southern Brazil. You just told me that things are drying out in the primary second crop corn growing area, safrinha. Will there be a problem there?
Well, that's the big question mark we have right now, because when you look historically at what could shut that down, I need this La Nina to let go. I need actually to really start to fade more quickly so that the MJO gets out of the Western Pacific and goes closer to Australia. And the reason for that is historically, when that occurs, we tend to really suppress the motion in the Brazilian monsoon. That slows down the monsoon, backs off on the precipitation, and that can stress the crop. Now, one thing we do know is the safrinha crop is going to go in fast. I mean, not like last year where it was so late. It's going to get in. The question is, if we get the MJO to phase 4, 5, or 6, that's what I want everybody listening to listen to guys like me talk about. If I keep saying 4, 5, 6 in the MJO, that is a signal that we could see dry conditions in Brazil on the safrinha crop tightening up that corn supply.
Hey, thank you.
Yeah, thank you.
That's Eric Snodgrass from Nutrien Ag Solutions and Agrible. He joined us here on the Closing Market Report. It came to you from Illinois Public Media. It is public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like at willag.org, willag.org. There you'll find the daily Closing Market Report and our Commodity Week program. That's coming up shortly, in fact, here on our program this afternoon. Many of these radio stations will carry the whole of the program over the weekend. And again, you can always hear it at Illinois Public Media's willag.org. Now, here's Commodity Week, recorded yesterday afternoon.
Todd Gleason's services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities out of Newmarket, Indiana, Dale Durkles from Grain Cycles in Bloomington, Illinois, and Kurt Kimmel of Bates Commodities out of Normal, Illinois. Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand at willag.org, willag.org. And there you'll find our podcast page. We have made some transitions. If you hit that podcast page, And you can subscribe to the podcast from right inside the player. Pick out your favorite podcast application there for the Closing Market Report, Commodity Week, and even the Illinois Nutrient Loss Reduction Podcast. Just click and subscribe, and you'll have it on your phone or iOS or tablet device anytime you'd like. Let's begin our conversation in this way. Dale Durkles on Wednesday of this week, the USDA released a whole bunch of reports, including their final crop production numbers for the year, the WASDE figures, grain stocks, and the wheat seedings numbers, along with some cotton figures too. Which of them did you find of most interest, and which do you think will have the most impact over the long run through the next quarter?
None of the above. Yeah, I don't know that any of them have any real huge impact, but I think the one thing that I'd point to more than anything else that's probably really important was the world S&D estimates on soybeans and oilseeds. Again, taking the soybean carryout down to 95 million ton, and that's back down to where we were 2 years ago and back down to the lows of recent times anyway. So, you know, it says, you know, going forward, you know, the oilseed situation is going to be relatively tight, and, you know, depending upon weather in South America, could get even tighter. So I think that was probably the most significant number of all.
On Thursday of this week, Kurt Kimmel, the market stutter-stepped after the USDA report. Is that simply related to the potential weekend rainfall and the three-day weekend as it's related to MLK Day here in the United States?
Yeah, I think it's a combination of quite a few different things, the three-day weekend and the rainfall. But two, if you go back, beans have rallied over $2 from last fall, and corn has rallied over $1 from last fall. So the beans probably show up more. They've been overbought here for a while, especially the last couple, 2 weeks here, and they're due for a correction. Technically, the momentum indicators had a divergence there. We made new highs, but the indicators failed to make some new highs. Also, if you kind of look at the March futures contract, you can kind of carve out a little bit of head and shoulders bottom there, and it did meet the upside objective on that. So I think it was quite a few factors. Plus two, a year ago, we kind of topped out here in mid-January, rolled over for a little while. So with the report out of the way, we removed some uncertainty and some unknowns. We're not going to see a situation of real tight supplies when you look at 1.5 corn carryout and a 350 million bushel bean carryout. That's ample supplies to work with. Now, the key question is, you know, how freely are those supplies going to move into the marketing channel?
We'll hear more from Kurt Kimmel from Bates Commodities in Normal, Illinois, along with Dale Durkles of Grain Cycles out of Bloomington, Illinois, and Wayne Nelson of L&M Commodities in Newmarket, Indiana, in just a moment.